Hi, it's Bill Radke. Thank you for listening to KUOW's Week in Review, the podcast. And please come see us live and in person on Friday, August 15th. We will review the week from the Center for Wooden Boats in South Lake Union with Joni Balter, Knute Berger, and Sherman Alexie. And it's free. And you don't even need to tell us that you're coming. Just show up. Show starts at 10 a.m. As always, you'll find more information at KUOW.org.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. 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 What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
Why should you want to know?
Well, so we can be informed voters. That's why. This is KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. Goodbye, Seattle Parks levees. We won't be needing you anymore. That and more election analysis in a moment. Also this hour, is it okay to have our elections decided by an out-of-state billionaire? If it's an out-of-state billionaire you agree with. Another big directive from the Washington State Supreme Court, and this one will cost money too. And the U.S. Supreme Court weighs in on the constitutional right to party. All of that coming up this hour. I'm Bill Radke. A question came up this week. Pot smokers are lighting up in parks in front of children. So if a child asks you, what's that smell? What do you say? And how about the inevitable follow-up, why? Why do people smoke it? The Facebook discussion is happening now at KUOW Public Radio. We'll share some of your answers. First, though, let's welcome our guests. Joni Balter, host of Civic Cocktail on the Seattle Channel and a columnist for Bloomberg View. Hi, Joni.
Good morning.
How should we deal with people who puff around kids?
Okay, so how about educate them? You got to fine them, that $27 thing.
Mm.
And then, and this does in fact come from the city attorney, Pete Holmes, we need vape lounges. We need vape cafes. So places, we're the opposite, if you know, of Amsterdam, where there's so many places to go to actually smoke the pot. Here, you can buy it, but there's nowhere to go.
Vape cafes. C.R. Douglas, political analyst at Q13, Fox News. C.R., what should we? How should we deal with the kid puffers?
You mean people around kids?
Right.
I would mostly ignore it. I think this is a very, very small problem. I've been to a ton of parks this summer, and I've not seen one sort of pot smoker anywhere. Certainly haven't smelled it. So I don't think it's huge, but I think a lot of warning signs up will probably help, and a lot of warnings maybe to the people who have the who have been doing this. But again, it's pretty isolated in my sense.
Erica C. Barnett is news editor at Publicola.com. Welcome.
Thank you.
What's Publicola?
Publicola.com is your local news website.
Well put.
The only one you need.
The only one you need. Ouch.
Smoking
around. Joni was suggesting we start enforcing the law if little kids are around.
I think that's a little silly. You know, we do have laws against drinking in public. So we do have that $27 fine. But I think that the ultimate solution is make it easier for people to who are, for example, like renters who can't legally smoke in their apartments to be able to do so they don't have to do it in public.
We'll say more about that. We'll hear from a kid and a mom coming up later this hour. You join us, too. Facebook, Public Radio, KUOW Public Radio, Twitter at KUOW, and on the phone, 206-685-2526. That's 206-685-BLAM. I'm Bill Radke with KUOW's Week in Review. Here's the Week in Review. Washington State had a little election this week. Joni Balter, what was the most intriguing thing voters said?
Well, for me, I had all eyes on the first congressional district where there was really an unexpected result on the Republican side. The Republicans had picked a Microsoft person, Mexican-American, Pedro Celis, put a lot. There was money in this race, and he almost came in third in the race against incumbent Susan Delbene, the Democrat. And what I think is so darn interesting about this, and it's not probably a cool thing to say, but we might in this state have problem with folks that have Hispanic names like Pedro.
Say more about that. What's your evidence for that?
My evidence goes a couple years ago to the state Supreme Court race with Steve Gonzalez. And so what we found during that contest was that a far less funded person almost won that. And especially in rural counties where folks just, I mean, it's not proven exactly, but it sure seems like people did not like that last name, Gonzalez. And I think that may be a factor here. I actually had a conversation with the state Republican Party chair before a civic cocktail and asked her about, you know, so you're running this folks and you, this man, and you're highlighting his immigrant story, which is a great story, absolutely. But I'm wondering if those voters specifically are going to buy it.
Hmm. Anyone agree with that? Are we prejudiced when we go, go to the ballot, to the polls, but when we mail in our ballots?
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I think that the fact that his name is Pedro and his last name is Celis was a huge factor in the fact that, I guess he's now coming in at like 15-point-something%.
So he's up to 16.
Okay. So he's going to be in second most likely. But I think that he would have done much better if he had had a white sounding last name. And I think that's, I don't know if that's, if you can say prejudice, but it sure looks like it.
Sounds like prejudice. Sounds like that's what we're saying. C.R. Douglas, any thoughts?
Well, I think he also sounded very, very, foreign, if you will, from Mexico.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, his name sounded, or he speaks with a heavy accent?
Spoke with a very heavy accent. Mm-hmm. And so I think anyone who sort of heard him, might have been turned off by that if you've got some prejudice.
He was the anointed candidate of the Republican Party, so the GOP is less ethnically prejudiced than the electorate of Western Washington.
I don't know if I'm going to bite on that one, but they certainly did want him, yes. But I think it's an example of the GOP has had problems fielding a good candidate in the first. This guy had a pretty impressive background. He was an immigrant, came here, became a citizen, huge success story at Microsoft. I mean, on paper, he had a very good story, but he did not have the heft of Republican candidates in other congressional districts. Never held elective office, was very unknown. He's a sort of second, third tier candidate. And they, even now that he's in the race going into November, it's going to be an uphill battle to take that seat.
So any final thought?
I was watching a little Facebook discussion on this between Chris Vance, who used to be the state Republican Party chair, and some other folks. And Chris Vance, who's in Cannon Beach, he happens to not supposedly be working. But anyway, he's the one who said, okay, now that Pedro Celis moved into second place, we have a race. And there was a counter comment from somebody else who said, you know, what part of 16% are you exaggerating? You know what I mean? And that Susan DelBene only had 51%. But here's something to consider, and this is true, that November, the electorate is just more Democratic than it is in the primary. And there are so many studies and examples that show that. And so it probably isn't as close as the Republicans had hoped. That district was drawn to be very even, but it's not proving to be.
C.R. Douglas, most intriguing thing about our election this week?
Well, aside from the first congressional district, the most intriguing thing was how well Republicans did. It was a very good day for them. Most of what was on the ballot were state legislative races, for control of the Olympia legislature. And the Senate is controlled by Republicans. House has been controlled by Democrats. Senate is really where the fight is. Democrats have wanted to retake that. Inslee's agenda has mostly been blocked or watered down by that body. And in the five competitive races where Democrats had a chance, they need to pick up two seats, they lost all of them. There will be a contest in November. Obviously, the top two go to the November ballot. But, I mean, Democrats were losing by 10 points, over 10 points, in basically all those races. Unless something changes, they are not going to retake the Senate.
Erica C. Barnett, most intriguing thing.
Well, as a City Hall reporter, of course, I'm going to say the Parks District. I found that absolutely fascinating, and I completely mispredicted it. I thought it was going
mispredicted.
I thought it was going to lose and lose badly, just based on talking to people who were sort of part of the chattering classes or what have you. And it seems to be. I mean, it's winning. It's got 53.2% now.
Recap this in a couple of sentences. What are we talking about?
So the Parks District basically creates a permanent property tax in Seattle that's going to be overseen by the city council and the mayor. And there was a sort of the anti-campaign argued that it was unaccountable, that it's going to be this permanent sort of shadow government, and that it'll allow, you know, the city to build landing strips in Cal Anderson Park and build stadiums and all kinds of stuff. And I think people...
Emeralds dripping from the trees.
Exactly.
And champagne fountains and those powerful hand dryers that make your hands wrinkle.
Which I am not against. I'm not against that. Mm-hmm. But I think people both were not taken in by that sort of misinformation campaign. And I think people just also, you know, saw parks on the ballot and said, yeah, I like that. Okay. I want parks.
Parks good.
Parks good, yeah. And I mean, it didn't win by anything near what the previous parks levies, which are temporary, have won by. But it is winning, and I was very surprised by that.
Well, I would have been okay if it went down. I did personally vote against it just for the simple reason that I thought the folks could come back with something just a teeny bit better.
That happens sometimes. We negotiate through the ballot box. We say, no, not that, but come with a little less.
You know, so Seattle's default position clearly is parks. We love parks. Everybody, how much do you love parks? More than you do. But another way to do it would have been the ability for the voters to dissolve the district if they didn't like the way it was going. If it was spending too much, it has quite a lot of taxing authority as it is now passed. But the voters have spoken, as they like to say. So,
well, they do have the ability to dissolve the district in the sense that they can vote out the city council members. And especially now that we're going to district elections, it will be, you know, even easier for, you know, a voter to say, hey, I really think that my money is being misspent on this, you know, on this parks project or on this parks levy, and vote against that person in their district.
Yeah, but then the council members would go away and the park district would stay there under that scenario.
It was a big gamble for Ed Murray. I mean, this was a much bigger levy. It was a forever levy, and it was an August levy, which were tougher to win, and he got it. And this racks up yet another kind of accomplishment for him in just 7 short months. Minimum wage, a rideshare agreement, a good new police chief, and this.
And this is the first one that he's actually accomplished at the ballot box.
Okay, Ed Murray, rolling. Coming up, a major, by the way, you're listening to C.R. Douglas and Erica C. Barnett and Joni Balter. I'm Bill Radke. A major decision from the Washington State Supreme Court in a moment on The Week in Review. Good morning. It's KUOW's Week in Review. You're a busy person, but you can take an hour and spend some time with some smarty people and catch up on the week's news and learn a little bit, maybe going into your cocktail parties this weekend. Yesterday, the Washington State Supreme Court banned something that we have come to call psychiatric boarding. This is when someone is involuntarily committed, sometimes by their families, sometimes it's police arresting a seemingly mentally unstable person. They get forced into a psychiatric treatment facility, except those are underfunded. And they don't have enough beds, so the patient is put up in their local emergency room, sometimes strapped down, often for days. Well, the state Supreme Court says that is illegal. That violates the state's Involuntary Treatment Act. C.R. Douglas, what happens next?
Well, it goes to the state legislature. I mean, basically, they have been cutting back beds at places like Western State, and this problem has been brewing, where there's no place to send people, so they are boarded. It's, in effect, the second mandate that the state legislature is under, which is an education mandate that they have been unconstitutionally neglecting schools, now unconstitutionally neglecting the mentally ill. It's a big fight. It's going to be right up there at the top of the agenda when they reconvene in January. But it is a problem that has been festering, and now they can't avoid it.
Festering to the point where Washington State is, I understand it, 47th in the nation in the number of psychiatric beds per capita. How did we come to that, Joni?
So another way to say this is, and this came from State Rep. Ross Hunter, who's all over this discussion, the chickens have come home to roost, he wrote me in an email. And listen, the state has been cutting its budget for many years. They've been cutting mental health for all those many years. And so they've got to come up with a pretty fast solution here, as DR was suggesting. They're going to have to very quickly open up beds at Western and Eastern State Hospitals. It's going to cost millions. They're also discussing this with even some of the regular private hospitals about how can we get these folks out of these inhumane conditions in the emergency rooms and then get them into, you know, more acceptable kind of treatment. Mm-hmm. But it is going to cost millions, and it may lead to raising taxes.
Why is Washington State bottom in the country when it comes to funding this? Any ideas, Erica?
Well, we don't have an income tax, for one thing.
Yes.
And we're an underfunded state on so many levels, including, as CR mentioned, education. We just don't have the tax base to pay for these really basic services. And I just read the story this morning, but I think it's incredibly tragic that people are that the situation is happening, that people are being housed and in Harborview, for example, and strapped down and in emergency rooms. And it's a problem. I mean, it's just a giant macro problem that we need to deal with.
So now the question is, will these people go from Harborview to the street until there's someplace else to put them? Do you think that that would be allowed to happen?
Well, that's another thing that Representative Hunter was addressing, that it just absolutely makes no sense to take people who you know are a danger to themselves and perhaps to others and put them out on the street. There are liability issues like crazy there, and the hospitals were discussing that. And some of the legislators were talking about that this morning, about how that is not the answer.
Here's an interesting thing, that we have this background check initiative on the ballot this fall for universal background checks for guns. And I think it's going to play into that, because those who oppose universal background checks a lot of times talk about the problem is the mental health system and that we aren't treating them well enough, that most of these people are out in the street. Because let's face it, a lot of these big gun incidents are mental health related. And I suspect you're going to have a lot of people opposing that background check initiative. They're going to say, hey, listen, this is the problem. The problem is the mental health system and not universal background checks.
And so a ruling like this bolsters that argument by bringing attention to how broken the system is?
I think it absolutely does. I think you're going to hear about it this fall.
Well, after the shootings in Connecticut, there was this sense, and Obama, you know, really suffered trying to do something about gun safety. And honestly, as that year unraveled, as he was trying to get something done in Congress, somehow the gun safety issue did become, in some ways, a mental health issue, which is then everyone just throws their hands up and says, oh, okay, it's just more funding. We don't know what to do about it.
Right. And is there a connection between the fact that the Washington State Supreme Court landed this huge, this McCleary decision, saying the state's underfunding education, and here the state is... a law is being broken and the state is going to have to again scramble for money. Are those coincidences, or is there something special going on in Washington State?
Well, listen, Supreme Court is a reactive body. So they only react to cases that are brought to them. So in that respect, it is a coincidence that this happened to come up at the same kind of time as McCleary. But I think in some ways, it's not a coincidence if you say, hey, we've been underfunding these things, and eventually they do come home to roost, and they have in this case.
I guess I'm not surprised after so many years of budget cuts that the Supreme Court would step in and say, not that one, not that one, that, you know, you've been cutting and cutting what you could get away with during those years. But it makes some sense to me that a court case would come through, a couple of them, and say, you did it wrong. You did it wrong. That was too much cutting. That was too much
budget cutting to the point of illegality.
I think the same conditions are showing up in the courts, the same reasons for both things. I mean, there's a systemic reason that both are happening, I guess is the way to put it.
All right. The regular budget gap conversation is just going to intensify. Coming up on KUOW's Week in Review, should we start enforcing the no smoking pot in public law if children are present? That and more still ahead. KUOW's Week in Review, C.R. Douglas, Erica C. Barnett, Joni Balter. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. We're running down the top stories of the week and analyzing. This week, NPR did a story about pot smoking in Seattle parks. They went to an unnamed crowded beach on Puget Sound. Any theories?
Okay.
Golden Gardens.
Madison.
We don't know. And they asked parkgoer Shelby Neva how she and her friends deal with the illegality of pot in public.
I think you should be careful, like, where you do it in public, but I definitely think it's okay as long as you're hiding it. Like a beer, you can drink a beer in a paper bag. So same with weed, you can hide it.
It's okay as long as you're hiding it. Her parents must be so proud. NPR also talked to a local mom and Parents Magazine editor named Natalie Singer-Valouche, who voted for legalization but says that's not a license to light up around kids.
You know, you shouldn't impose your skunky marijuana smell on little kids who, you know, basically come to an open space to enjoy nature and to be outside and to breathe clean air and to play freely and have fun.
Well, you can't smoke indoors except your home. You can smoke cigarettes on the beach, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
You can't smoke pot, but the police don't enforce it. I'm so high right now.
It seems so silly. Just the whole debate. I don't understand what the problem is. If you can smoke a cigarette in front of a kid or around a kid and, you know, pollute their air with, as she put it, you know, the skunky smell of a cigarette, then I don't think that pot is any worse.
Two words. Contact high. That is, it's the new reefer madness. That's a common phrase from people to say, yo, this isn't what, it's not legal and it's not what I voted for.
Well, you know, I think that in the great pot experiment that it is taking place in Washington and Colorado, that pot etiquette is still evolving. You know, we have the rules, but then there's the etiquette. And there's also this thing. So this mother is talking about the smell and the contact high, but she's also talking about the messaging to kids. And you do realize that the federal government said, when they said that they'd sort of let Washington and Oregon experiment, only if you don't sort of involve minors. But they weren't, you know, 100% specific exactly. You couldn't sell it to them, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But about all this other stuff, this has to evolve. And so, you know, the smoking in public, that's gonna find its way as the great experiment unfolds. And I think what I said at the top of the hour, we need places for people to smoke pot that are, you know, not necessarily in their houses. Vape lounges, cafes, sort of like Amsterdam. I had a conversation with a Colorado tourism official this week, and they have the same thing going on. So they have 44,000 hotel rooms. Guess how many you're allowed to smoke pot in? Eight.
Eight hotel rooms?
Right. So what people, this pot tourism thing, people who are going there, what they do is they go to some of these folks specialize it, like, you know, Airbnb and just all these sort of bed and breakfasts are like trying to bring business in. But it hasn't reached the point where people know exactly where to smoke pot.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, if you live in an apartment that is smoke free, which most apartments are, you're not allowed to smoke pot in your apartment. And half of Seattle is renters. So you have a situation where there is nowhere they are legally allowed to really be, except, you know, in maybe a homeowner's friend's house. So
yeah, let's make that clear. CR, I'm going to come to you in a moment. We did get a call. I'm glad you brought that up, Erica. We got a call this week from a KUOW listener with a pretty simple question.
I'm not a smoker and I'm not a pot smoker. But if I were, where would I smoke? Not in the car with my children, not on the street, not in the park, not at work. Please tell the public where they can smoke.
In your bathroom with the door locked.
In your backyard.
In your backyard?
I think it's backyard versus front yard here in some ways, you know.
Yep. If you have a backyard, you can do that.
She was a renter, I don't know. You know,
right.
Then the answer is basically zero.
Zero if...
So we said on the one hand, this is legal, and we said on the other hand, you can't do it. It's a mixed message.
Right. Not in view of the general public. That's the law. And by the way, I didn't realize that that includes... I'm quoting Initiative 502, open/consume a package of marijuana or marijuana-infused product. So you're not even legally allowed, am I getting that wrong, CR?
No, you are right.
Pot brownie outside.
They're not on the market yet, but when they are in a few months, you technically cannot eat a pot brownie in public. Try enforcing that one.
Right.
But I don't think that's going to be the problem. I mean, the problem here is the secondhand smoke, if you will, from the parent. But just to weigh in here, I think this is never going to be zero, but I think the scale of this problem is very low. I was out at Golden Gardens just a couple weeks ago on a beautiful Saturday. I mean, it was packed. And I actually was so stunned by how that I didn't smell pot. I actually said to someone, can you believe now in legalization, I'm not smelling it here in Golden Gardens.
Something smells wrong here.
Something smells wrong here. Smoking?
Well, I didn't want it, but there were a lot of kids there. But I guess it struck me that there's an amazing amount of voluntary compliance to this law right now. I just don't see it as a huge problem. Where it is, maybe there are pockets of alki, maybe Golden Gardens on days I'm not there. Put up a couple warning signs, see if that works. But I think the following the rules here has been pretty high.
I want to follow up on that with our Facebook page. People, I would say the vast majority of posters are agreeing with CR. And for example, Tyler, who says, "What would I say? The same thing I'd tell him if we walked by someone smoking a cigarette. It's marijuana. Don't breathe in the smoke." Claire says, "This question seems overwrought with anxiety." Paul says, "What is marijuana? It's a thing adults smoke. It's like beer, except it doesn't make you fat." Except, you know, then there is the follow-up. Like, I have kids. Do they really stop at what is that smell? No. They want to know why. Why? Why? Why do people do that? Why do they smoke pot? What are they escaping? I mean, they want to know everything. So it is a I have a sense that these people who are complaining, I saw it in the Seattle Times, I saw it from Parent Map magazine, that there is some anxiety about, you wish you didn't even, your little one, especially if they're little, didn't even know that people drink and smoke to dull or escape or because they have cancer. I mean, you want to be at the beach, man.
Well, it just seems so overprotective of children, and also so it shows a lack of understanding of how much children are actually aware of in the world.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Well, another idea, and think about technology coming along with e-cigarettes, vape cigarettes. You could imagine folks who are using the new kind of vape technology and walking down the street, and you wouldn't actually know what was in there, would you? You would just see them with an e-delivery system of some sort.
You sound pretty excited about these vape.
Yeah.
I think vape pot
I'm
cigarettes.
I'm vaped out over here, yes.
I think it's the same kind of conversation a parent has to have about alcohol, which is, you know, it's only legal for people over 21. There are upsides, there are downsides. Here, why some people do it, here not. I mean, parents have had to been doing that for quite a while. I actually think legality, the legal marijuana milestone, isn't as big as we think. Politically, yes, but socially, really, medical marijuana changed things, you know, 10, 15 years ago, where it became a lot more available. And I think parents have been having a lot more conversations, and that's been happening for quite a few years now.
That's C.R. Douglas with Erica C. Barnett. Joni Balter has the vapors. And we're going to get back with a week in review, and we're going to ask, do you want your local politicians to take a stand on Gaza, Iraq, any divisive world issue? That's next. KUOW's Week in Review, and this week, Seattle City Council member Shama Sawant asked her fellow council members to sign a letter calling on the President and Congress to denounce Israel's siege and blockade of Gaza and to end all U.S. government military aid for Israel. Fellow council member Tom Rasmussen told her, essentially, you don't speak for me.
You may use your podium as you wish, but I do not share your views in terms of condemning one party alone, but I do share your view in terms of abhorring the war and the violence that's occurring.
So Tom Rasmussen does not want to take sides in the Israel-Hamas conflict. Shama Sawant kind of does.
In my statement, I condemn both sides, and I don't condone violence of any kind, but I think it is necessary for, that's my opinion, again, I think it's necessary for us to acknowledge the complete lack of proportion between the violence that that Hamas is capable of and the violence that has been inflicted by the Israeli state on Palestine. That's my view. And as you said, we all should express our views.
Councilmember Nick Licata expressed his view and agreed with Sawant. Councilmember Sally Bagshaw said, I was elected to serve the city of Seattle. I'm not going to sign a letter that doesn't have something to do with what we can accomplish in the city. Mayor Ed Murray said, I don't think it benefits anyone to demonize the state of Israel. Erica, how can we help our listeners think about this question?
Well, the city council obviously has weighed in on international affairs in the past, as Nick Licata pointed out. They took a position on the war in Iraq, I believe, on Afghanistan. And so this would not be unprecedented. The difference, I guess, is that, number one, people in Seattle are not being directly impacted by this. So it's not like when they've taken positions on immigration reform and things like that, where, you know, where people in Seattle are actually being affected. And number two, I mean, there is a question of where do you stop? I mean, Sally Bagshaw pointed out, you know, why are we not taking a position on Nigeria and Boko Haram and the girls that were kidnapped? I mean, there are all kinds of horrors around the world that the city council could theoretically take a position on.
It's almost a position that the other that Boko Haram must not be important as to the city or something, right?
I mean, it kind of goes down that path where you are saying this is more important than that, and so I think that's the problem.
Well, when Shamar Sawant joins the United Nations, perhaps she should make some of these speeches. But I can tell you that over the years, the city council, whenever they get into this, it's like, why didn't you talk about Nigeria? Why are you messing with the Snake River dams in eastern Washington when they have very little to do with you? What's up with you getting involved in Burma? There was even a time, and this goes way, 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 way back, when the city council came out against the term manhole covers in city documents because that was sexist, so they had to be changed to maintenance something or other, utility covers. I mean, you got to keep focused on the business of the city or folks will make fun of you, and they may even throw you out of office if they get mad enough.
Well, I'll just real quickly, one other example that they did take a position on is this week they said, you know, we oppose the federal ban on gay and bisexual men giving blood. Now, that is a federal issue and arguably not within the purview of the city council, but it also affects people in Seattle. And in fact, it affects, you know, one member of the city council as well as our mayor. So so that seems more directly relevant to me than.
And moreover, that ban doesn't just affect, you know, sort of gay Seattleites who might want to give blood, but it's almost an official policy in Seattle to support blood drives. I mean, they do it a couple times a year. You get paid time to actually go give blood. And we have regular blood shortages in this region. So it affects the hospital system, too. I mean, just in July in the heat wave, there was a call for more blood because they had to abandon some of the mobile blood donation units. So I think that's a clear example of something where it made sense for the city council to weigh in. I think the Hamas-Israeli conflict is a ridiculous overreach for the city council to get involved in. As both Erica and Jenny basically said, I mean, where do you stop? I mean, if you go on record talking about that, there's almost nothing in the world that would be out of bounds. And suddenly, this becomes just a constituent service. I mean, you already have a lot of people who ask city council members, I want this resolution, I want that resolution. I mean, these aren't just council member generated, they're constituent generated. And you could spend your whole life doing that and wasting a lot of time.
You ask, where should we stop? How about if at zero? How about if no city resolutions on anything, just do the business of the city?
I almost would favor that. I mean, I think most resolutions are a waste of time and ridiculous, even if you could sort of say they were part of city business. But
what about C.R. Douglas Day?
I don't think there was a C.R. Douglas Day, although they did do. I mean, I guess full disclosure, they did some kind of resolution for me when I left the Seattle Channel. It was very nice.
Oh, so that resolution is just fine.
That's what I'm saying.
Unbelievable.
But I think, maybe I've just disqualified myself from this. But I think it's
stand down, sir. Have you no decency, sir? At long last.
I think in general there are wasted time, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, let's put it this way. You know what happens when they start doing too many of these? What happens is the voters say so-and-so doesn't have enough to do, doesn't have enough regular work to do. They become campaign issues, and all these folks are up for election in 2015. So enjoy that one.
All right. That is Joni Balter. And they're holding hands now. Joni Balter, civic cocktail on the Seattle Channel and columnist for Bloomberg View, grasping the palm of C.R. Douglas, political analyst at Q13 Fox News. I'm Bill Radke over on the other cold, distant side of the table with Erica C. Barnett, news editor at publiccola.com. Give me your hand, Erica. Thank you. We're together. Thanks for being with us on KUOW's Week in Review. In a moment, we're going to ask, do you want out-of-state big shots coming in and bigfooting your election? Stay tuned. KUW's Week in Review. Now. 1, 2, 3, eyes on me. Got that from my child. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. We're running down the big stories of the week. And this one, we've known about it for a while. The New York Times ran a front page story on it this week about California hedge fund billionaire Tom Steyer bankrolling Democrats in Washington state legislative and county races who support environmental regulation like he does, like Governor Inslee does. Tom Steyer says, hey, don't focus on me. Vote on the issues.
I really do not want people to think that this is, you know, something that is centered around me in any way, shape, or form. I am one of the people who cares a lot about this issue, but I really want to be one of the foot soldiers in this movement to make this a central issue in America and to make sure that Americans understand how important it is.
Who thinks we should vote against a candidate or an issue because there is outside money flowing in? Anybody?
I doubt anyone at this table would definitively say yes to that. Listen, we want campaigns. The ideal campaign is a grassroots campaign, a local campaign where everyone gives like $50 and they get thousands of contributions. But that is just not the world we live in. I mean, we live in a world, especially given some Supreme Court rulings, where we're going to have a lot of big money and they're going to be in races. You know, no one quite likes that. I think we like it less if the billionaire lives outside the state than if the billionaire lives inside the state. But I think the answer is to basically publicize this and make it clear. I mean, in some ways, this guy's money backfired last year in a legislative race down in Tacoma where he put in, what, $250,000, which is a lot. I mean, he's, you know, and that was brought up. So I think to the extent that you want to bring this up in races and sort of demonize the other side for the money they're getting, that's about the best way you can deal with it.
Well, it doesn't seem like it's doing a whole lot of good this time. I mean, he's in what? He's spent big in 5 races, and there's only one, Matt Eisenhower against Andy Hill.
Yeah.
In the 45th, where it's even competitive. So I can't get too outraged about a strategy that doesn't seem to be working.
Well, that's the question before us. So a lot of people, when they see this, they sort of like outside money when it benefits something that they're interested in. You alluded to that. But what race is he going to make a big difference in other than the one that Erica just mentioned? Because that actually is the one that might be in play. The only thing that I can think of is the other fact that it will be a little bit more Democratic in November. But I don't see the race for this guy's money to actually make that big difference.
Well, I guess I disagree. I mean, there are contribution limits to these candidates, but there's no contribution limit to these outside independent expenditure groups, which is, you know, he made $250,000 outside expenditure to this race last year. He could put in $500,000 in those 3 races, you know, $500,000 each. And that could make a lot of difference. I mean, Democrats have an uphill battle given the primary election returns, but
I'm just trying to imagine the exact race where that's going to change things.
Well, I think you could say Oban Tammy Green
perhaps,
down in Tacoma.
Perhaps.
You could say Milosha and Sherry Song and Fedra Way. And you could say Eisenhower and Hill. I mean, those are races that...
Those first two seem extremely unlikely.
It's extremely unlikely.
They put $500,000 in and things change.
As long as there's not a Hispanic name attached, as we were discussing earlier. Oh, now everybody's quiet. You're the one who brought it up.
No, I'm the one that brought it up.
This guy, Tom Steyer, backed 4 pro-environment council candidates in Whatcom County who could block a new coal shipping terminal, the Gateway, although the Bellingham Herald, did you read their response to they basically said, hey, if you're going to report on local issues, you might want to drop by. I mean, these, and they ticked off how these council candidates haven't taken a position, and Governor Inslee hasn't taken a position. He hasn't said that I oppose this gateway terminal. We're studying. We're studying.
It's a little bit odd that Inslee can't get a local funder for this. I mean, this is a, you know, this guy's in it for the environmental cause.
Yeah, that's a good point. We got rich people.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised he's relying on some California hedge fund guy.
Yeah,
to,
where's Nick Hanauer?
Where's Nick Hanauer? Where's,
Nick Hanauer is spending his money on the gun measure this year. That's not a secret.
But what you are going to see, and it's a point I'll just repeat here, is that as things go forward, and this is the new world we live in, more and more campaigns are going to be about the other guy and girl's money. I mean, it's going to be a chunk of your campaign messaging is always going to be about how much this outside guy gave or girl or this group. I mean, you saw that in the GMO fight. I mean, you're trying to demonize the other side's money, and you're just going to see more of that.
By the way, we were talking about how most of our listeners on Facebook were saying, like some of us here, it's pot, it's no big deal. We got to this just in from Shirley, who says, as I wheeze with asthma due to an allergy to pot, I'd tell the child what it is and that we need to get away from here so I can call the police since it's illegal to smoke pot in public. Join us anytime, KUOW Public Radio, that's Facebook, and Twitter at KUOW, and our phone number 206-685-2526, which is also 685-A-CLAM. Joni Balter, C.R. Douglas, Erica C. Barnett, and I'm Bill Radke, right back with more of KUOW's Week in Review. KUOW's Week in Review, I'm Bill Radke. The U.S. Supreme Court has handed down its ruling on your right to party. Joining us with that story, welcome back to Seattle, John Moe. John, hi.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Thank you very much.
John, this is Erica, and this is CR, and this is Joni.
Nice to meet you guys.
Hello.
And you too.
So John and I work together on the classic news comedy show, Rewind.
Yeah.
It's classic now, John.
It's classic, and, like classic Coke.
Mm-hmm. If you were a fan, you may remember a skit where I'm interviewing you, John. I think this is the first one of these we did. You're a travel writer, and you're giving me your review of Hotel California.
Yeah. I traveled down to Hotel California. It's a lovely place.
Granted,
it's a lovely place. Mm-hmm. There are some decor choices that were questionable.
Mm-hmm.
I find that when I'm in a bed at a hotel, I don't necessarily need to see a reflection of myself.
Yeah, so the mirrors on the ceiling.
Yeah. The beverages were chilled, if a little unusual. But I think the problem I had that really distracted, in addition to the checkout procedure, which is very complicated.
Yeah, it's like, let me get this straight. I can check out anytime I like.
Yeah, and I'm still here. I thought that was... But at the restaurant at the hotel, mm-hmm. I think they either need to acquire steelier knives,
right,
or a less resolute beast.
It's a problem.
After all the stabbing,
mm-hmm. yes,
you can't. It's like you can't kill the beast.
And since then, the staff has actually been working on some of the issues, right? The recorded announcements, I guess, the voices down the corridor.
Yeah. Well, they found, I mean, and this, I think, after a lot of Yelp reviews, pointed out that most guests do not want to be woken up in the middle of the night just to hear someone say, welcome to the Hotel California.
Exactly.
It's a terrible decision.
It's a terrible idea.
I'm sleeping soundly.
Right.
I've looked at myself in the mirror on the ceiling for a while and dozed off. And yet here it comes.
John, you've written a whole book of pop culture correspondence like this called Dear Luke, We Need to Talk, Darth.
Yes.
Explain.
So this is a series of pop culture correspondences. I've been writing pop song correspondences along these lines on the McSweeney's website for years. We do a version of it with live music on a show I host called Wits out of American Public Media.
Terrific show.
Thank you. And then I just expanded this to TV, to movies, to all facets of pop culture. So these are the long-lost letters connecting the things about pop culture that you might not have realized.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be in the form of a note. Billy Joel gets an earful from the manager at the piano bar.
Yeah, well, the manager, Anthony Cacciatore, says, you know, instead of playing songs, all you do is make observations about people coming into the bar,
right,
punctuated with la-di-da-di-da-da.
Di-di-da.
Yeah, it's not. And so he's saying, look, play us a song. You are the piano
you
man.
You are the piano man.
Play us a song tonight.
And if the customer, they didn't come here, first of all, if they have to remind you of that over and over, that's not good. And they're not there to be reminded of the wasted potential that is their lives.
No, and look, some people are trying to pioneer a new form of literature, real estate novels.
Right, support
that. They
don't
need to be hassled.
Yes.
And the waitress is getting a degree in political science. She's doing her best. You don't need the piano man.
Yeah.
Carrying on and on about
that. Maybe Davy is still in the Navy for good reasons that are
that
private to him.
Just the inherent rhyme in the name. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is where Supreme Court comes in.
Sure.
The court has ruled just this week, John, on Horovitz v. Horovitz.
Mm-hmm.
This is the case of Beastie Boys member Adam Horovitz versus his parents, who apparently oppose his fight for his right to party.
Well, I mean, it was interesting, and the upshot of it is that the court ended up affirming the right to party.
I should warn listeners, there's a lot of legal jargon in here. This is for people who really like to dig deep.
I'm going to try to break it down Nina Totenberg style, mm-hmm. Which is that the justices found that the First Amendment regarding freedom of expression, the Third Amendment regarding quartering of soldiers in people's home, mm-hmm. regardless of whether there was a party going on at mm-hmm. the time, and the Fifth Amendment regarding deprivation of life, liberty, or property without due process, all favored partying without intrusion. So in principle, it was upheld. The justices did not have kind words, however, for the plaintiff, the younger Horovitz, mm-hmm. Because the arguments he made was that his parents wouldn't let him out of the house if that's the clothes he's going to wear.
He's going to wear.
Yeah. But yet would kick him out of the home.
Yes.
If he did not cut his hair.
That's arbitrary and capricious.
Right. It's arbitrary and capricious. And so then all you're left with is the finding that mom is just jealous that it's the Beastie Boys, which is no basis for a legal case.
That from the U.S. Supreme Court, yeah. Related by John Moe, who is the author of Dear Luke, We Need to Talk, Darth. And John, you're signing this book tomorrow at the University Bookstore.
Reading and signing at the University Bookstore tomorrow at 5 p.m. There will be jokes.
Welcome back to Seattle, where you were for years, John. Yeah, I hired him. I noticed something in your Twitter feed, John, which I follow, as everyone should. It says, thought when I moved to Minnesota from Seattle 6.5 years ago, why is everyone so friendly? What did they want from me? And then, thought I have when I return to Seattle to visit. Why is everyone so crabby? Are these strangers mad at me?
Yes. Yeah, no.
It's all about you.
It's really all about me. It's all about me and the effect I have on other people. But no, I did notice that when I moved to Minnesota that people would be chatting me up, and I'd be wondering what's the angle? What are they working here? Mm-hmm. When we had our phone installed in Minnesota, the guy said, okay, let me call back and check the line, make sure it works. And he did, and then he's like, okay, so that's good. He said, okay, so are you going to any Twins games? And after a while, I realized we're just making friends. And
what do you think is going on in Seattle?
Well, I don't know. I've
lived for years.
I grew up here and lived here for almost my entire life. I have a theory that I'm working on, which is that in Minnesota, in the upper Midwest, you need to be nice to your neighbors because otherwise you'll die in a snowbank in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what I was thinking.
And in Seattle is a gold rush town, whether it was the original Alaska gold rush and starting a store called Nordstrom to get people outfitted for that, or a Microsoft gold rush or a tech gold rush. And people are out here prospecting. And they've got their pan and their pick, and they don't want anybody bumping into their claim.
Right.
And so it's more of like a standalone, do your own thing, make your own way kind of environment.
And they're also on their cell phones texting as they walk, which right. is really hard to smile at somebody when you're looking at your phone.
Yeah. Well, in the 90s, I remember before we had cell phones, we would just gaze at our shoes and then go start bands.
We had to have right. something for the Seattle Freeze. You had to have something.
Right.
You guys buy that? Seattle Freeze?
Well, you know, it's funny. My parents, I'm from the South, and my parents came out here. And the first time they were here, they said, ha, to everybody they saw on the street, and nobody said hi back. And they were like, this place is horrible. So, yeah, I buy it.
And, well, it is horrible, Grandma and Grandpa.
Well, if you're from the South, it takes some getting used to.
But we love it.
It's not necessarily horrible. It's just sort of more solitary.
Yes.
And it can be exhausting trying to make friends with too many people. Who has time?
John, I want to bring you on this last topic, too, because this week, because you're a sports fan from yes. Seattle from way back, unless maybe you're not anymore. Maybe it's all Vikings. But this week, former Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer talked to reporters about how he used to be one of the local buyers for a new NBA team, but he saw the chance to buy the Los Angeles Clippers, and he's doing that instead. So this soundbite is from King 5. I've played it several times. I still can't figure out what emotions are being expressed here. So maybe you can tell me.
I'll do my best.
Steve Ballmer. What do you think, Steve?
It is really unfortunate that the greatest city in America doesn't have a professional basketball team. So I still hope that happens.
So let's play that again. Steve, what's this? How do you feel? What's your emotion, Steve Ballmer, about the Seattle Sonics, which the bid to buy you have abandoned?
It is really unfortunate that the greatest city in America doesn't have a professional basketball team. So I still hope that happens.
It's all emotions. It's Steve Ballmer. All emotions all at once.
I think he's playing Walter White on a touring production of Breaking Bad.
Well, if you're Steve Ballmer, would you still even live here? I mean, you're best known for missing out on the cell phone, on mobile, a falling stock price, abandoning the Sonics. And is it curing malaria? No. No, that's right. It's giving $2 billion to Donald Sterling and his wife.
And getting pushed out of Microsoft.
Yeah.
Yeah. He seems like somebody's either rich stepdad or rich dad who left the family.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he got all these dollars, and then he's got all this time on his hands. And so you're thinking, I feel abandoned, but yet I want to take advantage of all that money.
Did you hear his UW graduation speech?
No.
This past June? Wow. Google that. He screamed his way through it.
We're talking about Steve Ballmer here?
We're talking about Steve Ballmer, yes. Very, very odd guy.
He's set to scream. Like that's the only voice.
That's
hard
the
to figure out what that's his emotions
speed.
Are about.
Yeah.
I think John's on to something, which is there's an impatience in retirement for this guy, and I don't think he wanted to wait for 2-5 years, whatever it might be, for Seattle to get to a team. So he picked the one that was up, that was available. Not really a golfer. He wanted to get back into doing something, and this is what he's doing.
C.R. Douglas, what he's doing is helping us break down the news of the week. He's with Q13 Fox News, political analyst there. Erica C. Barnett, news editor at Publicola.com. Joni Balter, host of Civic Cocktail on the Seattle Channel, columnist for Bloomberg View. John Moe hosts Public Radio's Wits, and the book is called Dear Luke, We Need to Talk, Darth. Thanks for coming, everybody.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
KUOW's Week in Review. Join us again in a week.